You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So the cost of borrowing just got lesser, and you would have heard all about it by now. That's because the South African Reserve Bank has cut the repurchasing rate by 25 basis points to 7.5%, down from 7.75% since the last meeting. In a nine-minute live television, radio and online address, the governor of the SARB, Lesitja Khanyago, outlined that it was a split decision, pointing to a robust Monetary Policy Committee meeting that no doubt lasted longer than the 9 minutes it took to deliver the decision. We speak now to Patrick Buthelezi, who is with Sanlam Investments. Patrick, thank you very much for your time this evening. Let's revisit that announcement from the governor of the Reserve Bank on the rate cut.
MPC decided to reduce the policy rate by 25 basis points with effect from the 31st of January 2025.
Mr. Buthelezi, relief for the hard-pressed consumer or not quite yet?
Yeah, it is a relief. Given the stock of debt that is owed by the consumer, 25 basis points for individuals, it may not mean that much, but for collective South Africans who are indebted, I think it is a relief. It is also indicating that inflation is under control. But the central bank in South Africa generally has been relatively cautious or conservative in this cutting cycle. Looking last year, when they started cutting, inflation already was around 4.4, and we saw inflation dipping below the lower ceiling, troughing around 2.8%. And then last year they only cut by 50 basis points cumulatively, and now this additional cut is taking a cumulative cut to around 75 basis points, which is a relief for consumers. But still, monetary policy stance at this level is still restrictive, so which means the central bank is still keeping monetary policy stance relatively restrictive, so indicating their commitment to keeping inflation contained.
At every turn, the governor of the Reserve Bank impresses upon us that the MPC's main contribution, as we heard again today, is to deliver low and stable inflation with well-anchored inflation expectations. Here's what we heard about consumer prices. Let's revisit that moment.
Moving to consumer prices, headline inflation averaged 4.4% last year, near the middle of our target range. Inflation slowed to 3% in December, having started the year above 5%. This was mainly due to favorable goods price developments, including food inflation reaching 15-year lows, as well as lower fuel costs. Because of these transitory factors, inflation is likely to remain in the bottom half of our target range through the first half of this year. But headline inflation should revert to around 4.5% thereafter, aided by core inflation, which remains at or below the midpoint over the forecast period horizon.
Mr. Buthelezi, sir, did consumers feel the effects of these transitory factors?
Yeah, I think lower inflation, people are feeling it. But now with lower inflation, what it means is prices are increasing at a slower pace. So if prices are already high but are increasing at a slower pace, unfortunately, as a consumer, the feeling that you get is pressure, because prices, the level is already high. So some people did not feel the impact of lower inflation, because the level is already high. But nonetheless, inflation did dip, and it was evident in real terms. So for people who got an increase in their salaries, let's say, of 5 or even 6%, because inflation dipped around to about 2.8, and then December was about 3%. So if you get an increase of about, say, 5%, it's still compared to inflation, so that still seems relatively better for households. So there are other items where inflation is still running very high, like, for instance, with electricity prices, so administered prices, for instance. Last year, electricity increased by over 11%, and NERSA today, we saw that it approved an increase of just over 12% or so. So, which means administered prices are running way higher than the upper target band, including medical aid. I think medical aid inflation is running. Is running higher. I think the benefits that people have felt, which is interesting, by the way, is food inflation that has slowed significantly, especially if you're taking into account the fact that last year we had El Nino. So El Nino, so which means it was drier than it. The weather was dry. We didn't have enough rains. And we saw in the southern parts of Africa, in countries such as Malawi, in countries like Mozambique, the impact was very severe in those countries. But in South Africa, despite facing El Nino, the impact on inflation, we didn't feel it that much because food disinflation continued. I mean, we saw food inflation in December, I think, measuring about around 1.6 or so, which is very low.
The governor also spoke about structural reforms. This is what we heard about that.
He also looked at a scenario of accelerated structural reforms domestically. This showed growth picking up gradually, getting to 3% in 2027. Importantly, this scenario also showed lower inflation and lower interest rates in South Africa, demonstrating how structural reforms can reduce the country's risk premium and create more monetary policy space.
Mr. Bultelezi, sir, the governor of the Reserve Bank at some point referred to South Africa's economy as a small open economy. Now, what does that mean? One, number two, what are structural reforms?
Okay, so a small open economy, it means South Africa, in the context of the global economy, the size is small, but is very integrated with the rest of the world through many channels. So it's trading, so exporting and importing, so whether goods or services, but it's also integrated with the rest of the world through the financial markets. So investors, they can buy bonds, they can buy equities, so they can buy different asset classes. So it's a small country, but very open, so other people, okay, they can access what we have. So that's all small open economy. And then with the structural reforms the governor is referring to. So in South Africa, post-global financial crisis, what we have observed is that the economy has been growing at a slower pace, whereas before global financial crisis, the economy was able to sustain 4% plus, because we were heading towards 2010, confidence was higher, and we didn't have load shedding problem. But now, post-global financial crisis, we had a couple of problems, so including electricity outages because of, in part, state capture and not investing in not investing in infrastructure. So structural reform, the purpose of structural reform under Operations Vulindlela is to target areas that have a significant impact on the economy, like for instance with energy. So if you have energy, so companies, they will have electricity they can produce or they can sell. So the next one is logistics, transport. So what you produce, you can transport or export it. So and then another problem is water. So fixing all these constraints that are keeping economy lower and also discouraging foreign investors to invest in South Africa, because unfortunately we don't have enough savings, so we still rely on foreign investment to help South Africa.
Why don't we have enough savings, and how far back can we trace that?
Yeah, I think the reason why we don't have enough savings is because, I mean, looking at people who are employed in South Africa, we don't have many of those. So we have a large number of people who are unemployed. So those who are employed, at times you find that they have to stretch their income to support people who are unemployed within the family. So there's that, and there's also cultural. So we haven't developed that culture of that culture of savings, because it also we need to develop that culture of savings. So we are more consumers than producers, so we need to change that as well. So I can just attribute to those two factors, but I think it's beyond those two factors. But I think more broadly, I can just limit to those two factors.
Problem. Thank you so much. You mentioned the word investment. This is what we heard from the governor of the Reserve Bank about that.
Similarly, on the demand side, investment has been depressed since COVID, while household and government spending have been more resilient. As growth picks up, we expect more rebalancing with a recovery in investment as well as improvements in the primary and secondary sectors. We will be monitoring the data carefully to assess how closely the economy tracks these projections.
Mr. Buthelezi, sir, what are the primary and secondary sectors in South Africa's economy?
Okay, so the primary sectors would be your agriculture, your mining. So they will form part of the primary sector, and then the secondary will be your manufacturing sector. So people who are processing, whether you're processing what has been mined or what harvested. So you, like for instance, if you put it in the tins, so what has been harvested in agriculture, you put it in tins, so that's manufacturing. Another process after the primary sector, so taking directly from the source, and then you process into the next stage. So your primary sector are those mining, agriculture, and then secondary is your manufacturing, so transforming what has been taken from the source.
Mm-hmm. Now, where the primary and secondary sectors are concerned, we heard that the South Africa's economy contracted in Q3, right? And that is largely due to a drop in agricultural production. We do expect a rebound in Q4. However, we also heard that mining and manufacturing underperformed as well. And so are we necessarily looking for investment in these sectors, or should we be stimulating these sectors on our own? Are we able to do that? Maybe the question here being, is it time to diversify and look within?
Yeah, I think what we had in the third quarter, we had a sharp decline in agriculture, so over 20%, and the reason for that is because of El Nino droughts that I've just highlighted. But now, I think the strange thing about other sectors like mining and manufacturing is, I mean, in the past, the belief was that mining and manufacturing were depressed by not having electricity, so having load shedding. And we didn't have load shedding in the third quarter. I think last time we had load shedding was late March. So I think what is depressing mining and manufacturing is more of a global demand. It's more of a global demand, but also as well as domestic demand. So global demand, why I'm saying it's global demand. Global demand we have seen, for instance, with the PMIs surveyed by the Bureau of Economic Research in Stellenbosch. So they've shown that new orders are very depressed. So manufacturers are not getting new orders. That is based on the latest data. So it's been relatively depressed. But what is encouraging within the publication of the PMI is the expectations. So manufacturers are still positive about 6 months outlook, so expecting things to turn around. So with interest rates having been coming down, not locally, not only locally, but also abroad, so with a lag, you tend to see a positive impact coming from lower interest rates. And also inflation is still relatively low. So lower inflation, what it does is it boosts real income growth. So it supports real income growth, and with the real income growth improving, so the consumer is expected to do better and support overall economy. Already in South Africa, we have also seen the support of a two-pot reform, two-pot reform. I mean, we've seen retail sales, for instance, coming out at just over 7%. So clearly indicating that the consumer is moving in the right direction. So with the lag, the production side, you can expect the production side to be supported. But also the production side, so I mentioned electricity, but it's not only electricity. We also need to see reforms on logistics also improving, because it's one thing to produce because you have electricity, but if you cannot export because you have problems with logistics, so there is another problem. So we need also to move more aggressively on reforms. And what was interesting with the statement was they ran a scenario, and the scenario on if they accelerate reform, what impact would that do on the economy? And firstly, they highlighted that the reforms will improve the economy. But on the positive side of the reforms is it will help to reduce inflation. And the reason why it will help to reduce inflation is because if you're improving the supply side, because what causing inflation is the imbalances between demand and supply. So if you improve the supply side faster than demand, then that is disinflationary.
The decision to cut the repo rate was not unanimous. It was split. And all members, the Reserve Bank governor, impressed on us that they were concerned about the uncertain global outlook. Here's what we heard in terms of the risks that are beyond our control.
At our last meeting, we warned about a more challenging global environment. Some of the risks we saw then have since materialized. In particular, the outlook for monetary policy in the United States has changed. The space for rate cuts by the Federal Reserve now looks limited, with core inflation still elevated and new inflation risks emerging, such as rising tariffs on trade.
Why does this matter?
Sorry?
Why does this matter, Mr. Buthelezi, sir?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it was interesting. It was interesting. The influence was that they had to decide a day after the Fed, and the Fed kept interest rates unchanged. And the reason why the Fed kept interest rates unchanged is because their inflation rate has been drifting upwards. I think the latest was about 2.9% and has been increasing for the past 3 months. And also core is high, and at the same time the economy is growing. So they didn't feel like it was necessary for them to cut at this stage. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is the uncertainty related to proposed trade policy. So by trade policy, what the president, the proposal by the president to impose tariffs on imported goods from China, Canada, Mexico, and all other countries. In fact, he mentioned a scenario, a very interesting scenario, where U.S. imposes tariffs of 10%, and other countries also retaliate. So they also increase tariffs because U.S. is imposing tariffs. So the impact of that is higher prices because no one gains. The U.S., they will import at higher prices, but also other countries will import at higher prices because they all impose tariffs. But what was interesting is also the exchange rate, the impact on the exchange rate. So he mentioned that the exchange rate could depreciate to about 21 rand. So if the exchange rate depreciates to about 21 rand, remember, we import a lot of things. We import fuel, we import machinery, we import a lot of things. So if the currency depreciates to 21 rand, that is inflationary. So in that scenario, which is called a trade war scenario, then things will turn around and the Fed might have to hike interest rates. Even other countries might have to hike interest rates. So the global environment is highly uncertain.
Sure, a lot of tit for tat going on. Thank you very much, sir, for your contribution this evening and helping us to thoroughly go through that. Patrick Buthelezi is an economist with Sanlam Investments.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.